Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. Have accessed entry 615.DE2722, certificate number 20625. Icelandic incest.
I mean, you know that there's nothing that you can't be totally honest with me about. I mean, you can say anything to me, you know? Anything at all.
You say I had a crush on my own cousin.
Hey. You just taught me a lesson. All right, we're in.
Did you forget to return your Icelandic incest tape to the video store? Iceland is not a big place. Have you been to Iceland?
I haven't. I had an opportunity to go, but I screwed it up.
Oh.
Yeah.
You accidentally went to Greenland?
No, I just alienated the people that had invited me.
Even the chilly Scandinavians can be alienated by you?
The government of Iceland has a program where they coordinate with Seattle independent radio station KEXP in a cultural exchange program.
There's actually a music festival that somehow takes place in Seattle and Reykjavik.
Yeah, that's right. And the first year they did it, they invited me to come to Reykjavik as a guest of the nation of Iceland to perform at a music festival there. And I was excited to go, but in a very Scandinavian way, they wanted me to do several things according to their timetable. And during that era, that part of my life, I was really sort of very much on my own calendar.
You weren't going to let the Icelandic cultural minister order you around.
And it was exactly that. Some culture minister said, if you need to make the following reservations at the following hotels because these hotels fill up fast. And I said, you're the culture minister. Like, reserve the rooms for me. And he was like, that's simply not how it's done. And then I took a look at the bill and I realized that on the stage I was playing, the headliners were a puppet show.
Oh, I remember this. Puppet right? Show and Long Winters.
Yeah, and I said, you know, this is a Spinal Tap reference. You cannot possibly ask me to go on after a puppet show. And the culture minister said, puppets are very big in Iceland. And anyway, so I fully intended to go, but I pushed back on so many of these things in a way that I admit was pretty dickish. Because I was just, I don't know what. I'm bipolar. I was having an episode probably.
And if you're going to alienate a country, why not?
There's only 300,000 of them.
Yeah, exactly.
But eventually, they never rescinded the invitation. They just got very icy. And,
and Randy?
You can ice me out, and I'll just ice you harder. So we iced each other, and then the festival came and went. I ran into the culture minister a year later, and we were very cordial, but he didn't extend me a new invitation. And now times have changed and I'm not.
You need the geyser of forgiveness to thaw your relations with the Icelandic regime.
I was a bigger deal back then than I am now. Iceland, you know, at the time they were like, oh, and now they're like, there's a whole new, the Icelandic culture minister now is probably 32.
It definitely has an outsized cultural scene relative to its population than you would expect.
They create
right?
a lot of music. They're very...
poetry.
They're very exotic.
What do you mean by that?
I know, right? Let's orientalize the Icelanders.
Yeah, of all people.
They are
because they have pointy elven ears.
They were so isolated for so long, and their culture is so insular, and it feels like they do have this kind of, there's the stereotype of them being sort of magical thinkers, and that's, they create all this wonderful art.
If you fly Iceland Air, which I sometimes have, sometimes it's an inexpensive way to get to Europe. They'll kind of undercut the European airlines if you spend the night in Reykjavik,
right?
Because then you'll see the sights. And it's true. So we totally fell for this. My wife and I spent a couple, 2-3 days in Iceland.
And?
Quite charming. But Iceland Air really, really pushes the we are the little whimsical country. Oh. Like when you get into the plane, every seat back displays rotating trivia facts about Iceland, all of which seem to convey we are barely a country. Like the trivia fact will be like 79% of people in Iceland believe in elves and dwarves.
Right.
Or Iceland is the only country whose prime minister is in the phone book.
It's like the Bartles and James ad campaign, right?
It really is. Yeah. Like, or, Ben and Jerry's, like, right, we're the fun country. We're too little to be trouble.
It's the whole country is just a Wes Anderson film.
It really is. And some of that has been amped up by, I'm sure, New York-based marketing firms.
Right. And I imagine there are plenty of Icelanders who are like, ugh, eye-rolling at the fact that that they don't want to be portrayed as
too late.
People in Middle Earth.
Your cultural ministry has decided you are all dwarf-baiting weirdos.
Well, and they tried for a while to be like some kind of financial haven where everybody, where you would register your multinational bank, but then it all ended up being a Ponzi scheme.
When that all collapsed, it meant that a trip to Iceland is now merely extremely expensive instead of exorbitantly expensive.
Right.
Their economy crashing did not actually make things affordable there.
That's actually too bad. I kind of, for a while, held on to the idea that Iceland would be some sort of cheap, cheap vacation spot, like Portugal in the early 80s,
It's the opposite of that. It's the place where all the middle-class Americans go to this, beloved hot dog stand, because it's the only place you can eat dinner for less than 15 bucks a head. Or you can eat the fermented shark, which is apparently just legendarily awful, and they keep it around for foreigners.
It's like haggis?
Yeah, but worse. Like, what if haggis was really smelly? Now how much would you pay?
I feel like haggis is already pretty smelly.
Smellier.
So is Iceland Air a good airline?
Yeah. I liked it very much.
This show not brought to you by Iceland Air, although we're willing to consider it.
If we're now being brought to you by a different budget European airline, please forget what we just said about Iceland Air.
Sorry, Ryanair.
The other one is much nicer and doesn't actually make you squeeze under the seat or whatever.
Well, what's interesting about that whole idea is that when you're booking a European vacation, one of the things you don't often have is 2 or 3 extra days, right? You're not like, what am I going to do with all these days? Usually you are going to Europe and you have like,
so I'm going to go to London and Paris, but I've got all this extra time on the way.
Yeah, what else should I do? Maybe I'll stop in Reykjavik for 3 days.
But people like the novelty of Iceland, and they're not wrong. Like, the landscape looks like nowhere else on Earth. Just remarkable geysers and waterfalls and stark kind of basalt scenery. You don't go for the weather. We were there in May and June, and it was quite dreary,
right?
Weather-wise. But Reykjavik, it feels like it's the national capital, and yet you feel like you're in Astoria, Oregon or something. It's just a little coastal town made of brightly colored, brightly painted corrugated metal.
And are people, I can only imagine because they're Scandinavian that they are friendly but cold. Is that the actual sense of it on the street? Because all you have to do is spend an afternoon at a sidewalk cafe in Copenhagen to know that everyone is extremely friendly, but
they don't want to be friends.
They don't want to be friends, right? Yeah. I mean, it's our Seattle way too, but they really amp it up.
We got it from them.
Yeah,
That's our forefathers. And of course, Iceland was settled by the same people. It was largely Norse sea rovers. I don't want to see Norse men gendered.
Right.
Norse people.
Norse sea rovers.
The Norse sea rovers of either gender or anywhere in between in their spectrum of gender. Mm-hmm. And they're slaves, apparently. That's a fun thing about the Vikings is they enslaved a ton of different Gaels and Celts and all kinds of northern folks.
Right.
And so we don't, you know, so that's what makes the genetic background of Iceland not uniformly Norse like you would think.
It's not all Scandinavian. It's got some Gaelic and some Irish and early
Picts or whatever.
Right.
Because they were the ones that had to row the ships,
Neanderthals.
I guess. But despite that, it is a fairly... because they were isolated, you know, the place was just empty until whenever it was settled, between 900 and 1100 AD.
Iceland doesn't refer to ice. It refers to isolated. It's shortened for isolated land.
Yeah. I mean, our word isolate means to put on an island, like insular, and peninsula means almost an island, except for in that one little place where it's not an island. It's an island. It's like penultimate. But because of that isolation for really 1,000 years, I mean, for one thing, there were no natives to protect against, and that's why there's no big cities in Iceland, really. Nobody had to lump up and form a fort.
Because they weren't defending against the Vikings, because they were the Vikings?
They were the Vikings, and there was nobody there to defend against. It's like the only place where settlers showed up, and, you know, most of the time settlers pretend there are no indigenous peoples. In this case, it was true. They could just let their sheep wander freely, and so to this day, Iceland is just covered in sheep.
And Greenland has a large indigenous population and did then, but Iceland...
Yeah, I guess the Inuits, the relatives of the Inuit people, whatever northern people were the original Greenlanders, never made it to Iceland. Hmm. Or if they did, they
didn't survive.
Because they didn't believe in trolls and, and elves.
The trolls ate them, as trolls do.
The elves. They were like the rocks from Frozen that came to life and squished them. But because of this kind of heterogeneous genetic background and the fact that it was isolated for many years, Iceland is an incredibly lively place for genetic study. You know, a lot of course. You know, it's like the way we study the fruit fly because its genes are easy to isolate. Well, Iceland is also very similar. And it does kind of have the founder effect that you see when a population is started by a small group of people. You know, inbreeding is famously not good for genetics. And there's some suggestion that that's true in Iceland. You know, for example, there's a very rare chromosome that causes breast cancer and ovarian cancer that's almost unheard of everywhere in the world. But in Iceland, it's commonplace. 1 in 250 people have it.
Interesting.
Just because it was the original, you know, few thousand people. Those are all the genes you have.
Well, so Iceland is a microcosm of like an Earth population, but it also is kind of a macrocosm of what would be a Mars mission population.
Exactly. Colonizing Mars, you know, we kind of think, oh, we'll just send 20 people and that'll start the base.
Right.
And Iceland tells you, really, you need a lot more than that.
So how many, I mean, what I've heard so many different numbers, like 98 was a number that got bandied around a while, that you would need 98 people to send out a spore ship.
If you have 97 people, you're all going to be
not enough.
There's weak-jawed, hemophiliac Habsburgs by the time the next transit of Venus occurs.
But if you could grow your population on this arc, you could keep enough diversity. But I think that But I've heard other numbers that are much larger than that to create enough genetic diversity that you would have a healthy population.
Well, one thing about Iceland, yeah, I don't know what the number is. I mean, I guess you could always do the interstellar thing and send genetic material, you know, make sure your spore ship is full of,
It
is really a traveling sperm and egg bank.
Right.
And then, you know, those people don't need to eat. They just sent their genetic material with you. So there are workarounds like that, as long as the new Martians don't mind endless heartbreaking fertility treatments.
Right. Or, you know, or the Martians don't mind being bred with foreign DNA shot at them out of a dart gun.
Oh, by Martians, I meant the new Martians.
Oh, new Martians. Yes. I thought you meant like beep, beep,
beep. I'm assuming there are no actual Martians.
I'm building a giant space monster.
I'm going to destroy the Earth if you keep shooting sperm samples at me. I guess there was the studies that they've done on Icelandic DNA shows there's been substantial genetic drift from what you'd expect, given that there was a very small population of founders. But apparently it's still enough of a problem that it's top of mind for these people as they date.
Oh, really? Well, I guess it would be, right? You're not going to you're not going to want to date your cousin, but it seems like anyone who is closely enough related to you, you would know through your aunt, right? You would, I mean, in a country that small, you would just kind of, you'd ask your aunts.
There's a few problems. What if you don't have your aunt at the club?
Oh, I mean, at the club.
When I see you at the club, obviously you're always with your aunt.
Yes.
And she's knitting.
Aunts. Yes.
Sometimes you
we roll pretty hard, me and my aunts.
You're covered in ants as you sit in the club and you're dabbing honey so people
we're up the in ants the will VIP. Crawl over you.
But there are some Iceland specific problems. One is that, you know, everybody lives, even though Reykjavik is basically Bellingham, everybody lives there. So, you know, thousands of years of culture have just produced, thousands of years of isolation have just produced, you know, 200,000 people that all live, you know, your whole country is Cedar Rapids, Iowa, basically.
Right.
Like anybody you could date in the country
is right there.
Yeah, it's not like you could move across Iceland and get out of the incest pool.
Right. And they all have pointy ears and violet eyes.
They all look like Bjork.
So you can't really distinguish one from another.
And even names don't help.
Hmm?
Because Iceland does not have the thing where a family name carries down.
Oh, it's like the Welsh were like this until 1780, where you're just named John, son of Robert.
Exactly.
You don't have a surname.
What happened in 1780? Last names were invented.
The British came in and said, you can no longer do this. We need to write everybody's name down in a book. And so my first Welsh ancestor was named John, son of Roderick, or Ryderike. And they wrote him down as John Roderick.
I bet people were always saying Ryderike, and he was so angry.
He was just like,
it's not, it's three syllables.
Ryderike.
I mean, he was Welsh. He didn't know what a syllable was.
But so who? Yeah, I know, right? He could barely bang two rocks together. But whoever that Ryderike was the first one, the first Roderick we can put our
He just happened
on.
To have his patronymic in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, but that first John got his name written down in the book. And so began the noble legacy of the Rodericks.
So without England there to menace Iceland adopting lost names, they still do what the Welsh used to do, which is your name is just... You know, if your dad was named Gudmund, then their last name is Gudmund's son, and their daughters are Gudmund's dottir.
So your son's name would be Kenson?
Yes. And my daughter would be...
Mindy daughter?
I think it's the dad. Maybe there's matronymic. I think it's just the father. I think it's just like my daughter would be Katie Ken's dottir.
Really?
Yeah. And so you don't have the same last name as your siblings. Much less your mom or dad, your cousin. So you can see the problem. Like if I met an attractive person at a family reunion or anywhere else, and they had a name that I recognized as being...
This is the thing. If you met them at a family reunion, that's a red flag.
Not to me.
I'm there
to mix and mingle. but the fact is, any date in Iceland is effectively a family reunion.
Sure.
Because... there's so much interbreeding. I don't want to say inbreeding because...
Interbreeding.
Because genetically, they seem to be doing okay.
But I went to a family reunion in Malad City, Idaho one time, and there were like 2,000 Rodericks there. I figured,
and were any of them attractive?
Not a one.
Welcome to Idaho.
Not a one. I know. I was so disappointed. I was like, come on!
Yeah, and maybe next year, try to find a wing of the Rodericks that... live in a place with orthodontia. I don't know what to tell you.
Have you ever been to a Jennings reunion out on the frontier?
When I was a kid, but it was a very localized one. It was like, it went back to my great grandma, who was kind of this papery, thin, wispy 92-year-old who kept getting wheeled out in a wicker chair.
But like a close-knit group that could fit in a backyard, not something that took up a field.
It was really not like, we're going to find all the Jenningses of the Oklahoma Jenningses.
Yeah, this Roderick thing had, there were hot air balloons, there was an air show, it was the whole hula hoop contests, it was a big deal.
Hot air balloons?
No, not really.
So it's less inspiring than Wonder Bread?
Yeah.
So between those three things, a founder effect leading to a unusually small genetic base, and nobody having reliable family last names, and everybody essentially living in the same city... I guess people do worry about accidentally sleeping with a relative.
Now, hold on. They worry about accidentally impregnating a relative. But does anyone really worry about accidentally sleeping with a relative?
You feel like incest taboos are only good so far as there's offspring?
No, I feel like an incest taboo applies only as far as you know the person. Like, nobody cares if they sleep with a second cousin if you don't know any people in common.
And I guess if there's no social stigma. Maybe there's stigma in Iceland.
There it would be hard for there to be because it seems like
it's an unavoidable.
Seems like they've been having cousin sex for many centuries.
In the U.S., it's kind of an overstated problem, right? In most U.S. states, you can marry your first cousin, and that's because the risk has been the risk of birth defect, which is what people are worried about, has been measured to be close to incidental. And once you get to second cousins, it's literally, you know, as near to zero as makes no odds.
In southeastern Ohio, it's mandatory that you marry. I mean, if you go past second cousin, you're violating some social mores.
Well, I mean, for one thing, everybody is related at a certain point, right? I mean, if you look at U.S. presidents, I think all U.S. presidents are related to George Washington. They're either 12th cousins or narrower. Barack Obama and George Washington are 12th cousins.
I mean, this is the argument against racism, right? That yes. There is no real genetic difference between us. There's more genetic difference between two different people from Africa than there is between any one person from Africa and someone from Iceland.
Yes, that is true. And so a lot of it, just like racism, perhaps this kind of incest, inbreeding, fear-mongering is more social stigma than anything else.
Yeah, right. I mean, you can be very suspicious of people from southeastern Ohio without even needing to get into the incest thing.
But, you know, but the News of Iceland report I read referred to this kind of fear that you might accidentally date a cousin as something that everyone has heard of or experienced. Hmm. Like, it's just taken as read that you all know that classic dating blunder when you date your cousin. But this is something technology can now fix. And the other reason why Iceland is much studied by geneticists, mm-hmm. is that a word?
Mm,
and genealogists, is that the family...
Two different things.
Right. But both is because the family records there are very good.
Oh, sure. Well, they would be.
So they've got, you know...
Family Bibles all the way back.
Family Bibles, church records of weddings and christenings and so forth. So it's very easy to see how DNA and chromosomes match up with family trees.
Oh, cool.
So to that end, an Icelandic in the year...
12 AD. 1200 AD.
Fast forward to the year 2013 AD.
Oh, 2013.
In the
more recently.
Recent past, in our time, an Icelandic app developer called Sad Engineers Studio.
Oh, Sad Engineers Studio. I've worked with them.
Like, it's a little bit redundant, right? Wait, you're a computer programmer and you're sad? They created an app called Icelandinga app, which just means Icelandic app.
Oh, you don't even need to say what it means, Icelandinga app.
The name is not catchy.
Yeah.
But it has a complete, you know, as near as complete as they can get, Icelandic genealogical database. It has the family history data of 720,000 Icelanders going back 1,200 years based on their advanced religious records and censuses.
That's phenomenal.
And so forth. And so you have access to this database on your phone at all times. And so you can see what the application would be, right? If you and your the person you're dancing with at the club both have Icelandinga app on your phone.
The club, yes.
As they say in Iceland. And you can just take your smartphones out and boomp them.
Oh, you boomp them.
You boomp them, mm-hmm. with an umlaut. And the app will tell you how closely related you are using its Sepia Spellspiller feature.
Oh, the Sepia Spellspiller.
That means incest spoiler.
Oh, boo.
You don't like having an incest blocker on your app?
I'm saying that one of the things about incest, and I don't want to go too far
just,
off.
Just one of the things.
One of the
You've
things
got a lot
about
to say about incest, but here's that, where you start.
That there is a gradation of incest, and at some point as you move out on the gradation of incest, it starts to become hot. Right? There's some middle ground. It's like, ooh, gross, ooh, gross. Well, it's sort of like, ooh, hot. Like somewhere right in there, what, second cousin, third cousin? I mean, I'm not saying universally hot. Not everybody's going to find it hot, but some people are going to find that appealing. You're going to bump in the club, and it's going to say, "Whoopsie daisy, you guys are third cousins," and that is not going to inhibit that coupling.
I don't want to kink shame here, but apparently it's one of the fastest rising segment in internet pornography.
What?
Is incest related.
I thought that was still MILFs.
In the year 2014, the fourth most searched for term on Pornhub, which is apparently some type of pornographic archive. I don't know. Yeah, I've never heard of it until this Esquire article I'm reading. The fourth most searched for term on Pornhub was stepmom.
Yeah.
And mom was fifth.
Uh-huh.
I guess just it's just deviant enough that it's now that everything else has been normalized, the incest taboo deep in our genes is the last thing that still seems sick and wrong.
Well, I'm guessing even in Iceland, you wouldn't need an app to tell if the person you met in the club was your mom.
Well, one of the reviews of this app says, if I'd had this in earlier, maybe I would not go home with my aunt.
Oh.
So.
Or, I mean, he's definitely saying maybe.
Yeah, and it's not clear whether he's wishing he had had it or he's glad he didn't have it.
It's not even clear that he's a he, right? It could. I mean, and it's...
That's a fair point.
But the question is, would this person have gone home with their aunt if they'd known it was their aunt?
Is that a plus or a minus?
Yeah.
And it depends on what you're into, I guess.
I have an extended family that is not very interesting, and it does not, they're not a ton of like...
They're not interesting to date, you mean?
Or even interesting to stand around at parties and talk about our relatives that we have in common. But certainly
I hope their descendants are not listening to this.
I've never met a cousin or a distant relative where I was like, oh, you've got something going on. Most of them, I'm just like, oh boy, here he comes.
You have a very strong incest taboo.
It's
convinced you that they're not only sexually uninteresting, they're conversationally uninteresting Your DNA taboo is taking no chances.
My incest taboo extends to the level of sitting down to dinner. No, thanks. We're all too closely related.
The funny thing is I have something very close to a Cepheus spell spiller on my phone.
What is it? It's some Latter-day Saints thing.
Exactly.
Ah.
So the Latter-day Saint movement is also famously obsessed with genealogy.
Right.
Because they believe in, connecting family bonds over the generations, as far back as you can get with church and census data. Perform religious ceremonies via proxy, in fact, for these deceased people.
Via proxy, for people that have already moved to the great beyond.
Yes. Like what if great, 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 great grandma Ruth never found Jesus in life? Now's the chance to offer her baptism in the other world.
So it would, records would.
Right. And if you don't know who great, 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 great grandma Ruth is, how are you possibly
going to? She's just walking in the mist of time. She's out in the hereafter. She can't even hear the bell ringing.
Apparently God is not pleased with blanket genealogical statements like, I hereby declare all my ancestors.
Oh.
Christian.
No. If I were God, I would also be displeased.
You need to specify.
Yeah.
And so therefore you need data.
You need Ruth.
So as a result, Salt Lake City has, the world's largest genealogical archive
in
a bunker in the granite Wasatch Mountains.
I've utilized their services. I've gone to the Salt Lake genealogical peeps
to find out about your Roderick genes.
Well, yeah, and the Roderick ones, or I'm sorry, and the Rochester and Page. I mean, I've traced a lot of family stuff back.
So there's a pretty great Mormon app that they're kind of taking it. In the post Alex Haley roots era, the church has been very canny about taking advantage of kind of the popular interest in genealogy, even with people who are not interested in baptizing their distant ancestors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, what if you just want to know the stories? Which is presumably why you were at the vault. You didn't care to baptize anyone.
No. I was just there because I like stories, and genealogy is the primary story that if you're looking for a story beyond like what your dad did for a living.
The stories are amazing.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't even have to be the family connection. It's just the fact that this is some unheard thing, some first-person thing describing whatever their terrible travail was with dysentery or the government giving them dysentery.
Right.
Whatever it is.
Dysentery giving them a government.
In some cases. So this family search app, you can immediately, you type in your info, you say who you are, what your birth date is. and it probably knows census data about your grandparents and your great grandparents and your distant cousins.
We've talked about this, you and I, potentially being related via my Mormon cousins, and but we've never put the info into this app.
Well, we could bump. There is a find your relatives feature in this app where, you know, it's kind of like the, is anybody I know, you know, hanging out around here after work kind of
right,
thing.
Right, right, right. It's like a Grindr thing.
Geotexting thing. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's a Grindr thing basically, but, for relatives only, un-Grindr. And it's not to prevent incest. It's more just like, you know, to get people to think genealogy is cool.
Well, so if you're at Pike Place Market and you put your location in there, it's going to say like, wow, there's a 14th cousin standing over there at the fish thrower.
The problem is it can't, you know, it doesn't have facial recognition. It has to be somebody else logged into the app.
Right.
So basically it only works at BYU football games, I think. But if enough people were to have that app, you could absolutely do that. You go to Pike Place Market and be like, boom, fourth cousin, boom, second
cousin.
What's
the name of the app?
Family Search.
Family Search app.
Unless some other genealogy app is advertising on the podcast now, in which case use them instead.
Right.
But Iceland has now avoided this just for incest prevention purposes, and it appears to be very popular.
Is it working? I mean, it's popular, but has it like...
Is it keeping down all the ants making out going on in Reykjavik clubs? Well, what I've found is that it might actually be counterproductive. There's some very counterintuitive results in this field. In 2008, a Reykjavik genetics lab did this massive study of every Icelandic couple they could find born between 1800 and 1965.
I love this.
Because find out, you know, were they second cousins? Were they fourth cousins? Were they 18th cousins?
Science!
They were some kind of cousin for sure because they're in Iceland.
Right.
And this was before any kind of immigration boom from anywhere else. And they wanted to correlate offspring with the degree of closeness of relation between the parents.
And they discovered everyone in Parliament was the product of successive incestuous relationships.
They found out that's where the elves come from. But it did turn out that they were expecting to find that the closer the relation, the worse the genetic output. They found that in women born in the early 19th century, if you were distantly related to your spouse, eighth cousins or more or further, you would tend to have 3.3 children and 7.3 grandchildren. However, if you were third cousins, you would have 4 children and on average 9.2 grandchildren.
Hmm.
You would tend to have more genetic progeny and presumably fitter ones because they're continuing to reproduce if your marriage was between third cousins. And the numbers get even more striking in the 20th century, between 1925 and 1949, third cousins had 3.5 kids and 6.5 grandkids, whereas the eighth cousins had 2.5 kids and 5 grandkids. So the marriage is more successful if you're married to a closer cousin.
Do you think it is that in someone who is related to us, we see something of ourselves in them and find that attractive?
So the author of the study did not suggest a mechanism. He just called the findings counterintuitive, almost dislikable, which I enjoy when a scientist tells me in advance that his results are dislikable. I like the implicit permission. But when an American geneticist was asked like why there might be greater biological benefit and fitness to these closer relations, that's exactly what he suggests. Maybe what we're seeing here is biologic attraction. If you really look alike, feel alike, and think alike, then maybe you have sex more often.
Yeah, right. I mean,
what everyone really wants is to be with someone like themselves.
Yeah, we're all onanists.
We're all narcissists. Like, you remind me of me. That's funny. Like, I've definitely noticed that in my own marriage that when, like, my wife makes a joke that sounds like a joke I would say, I laugh so much harder.
Right.
Than when she makes a joke that sounds like her sense of humor.
Right.
He also suggests maybe there's a pheromonal basis. Maybe if two people with the same genes tend to share the same scent, you know?
Yeah.
Which then ups sexual attraction. And so I guess Dr. Stephenson, the Icelandic guy behind the study, suggests that there must be some kind of Goldilocks zone. Are you familiar with the phrase?
Where you're I mean, in this case, meaning that you'd be just far enough away, but not too far away.
Right. Like in terms of exoplanets, you want a planet that's neither too warm nor too cold, like the bowls of porridge.
Oh, sure.
In the Goldilocks Three Bears zone. House. And what if there was a genetic Goldilocks zone where you don't want to be married to your sister?
No.
Because that's going to lead to trouble.
Jesus, not my sister.
I could be married to your sister, but yeah, you would not want to.
I'd be happy for you to be married to my sister. You might be a calming influence.
Sadly, already
that's
married.
True.
She's going to have to play a didgeridoo at somebody else's chakras. Mm. But you don't want to be too far away, because then you don't have whatever just sense of camaraderie and recognition come with being with family.
You're like,
I guess. Yeah. You're someone like you. So in between, there's this zone of dating where you essentially want to be with a third or fourth cousin. That's peak dating.
Which is interesting, because we're living in a time where there's sort of unprecedented access to people from around the world. People are, I mean, I have a friend who's half Icelandic, half Korean. Which is
wouldn't it be cool to be the first person of your race?
Yeah, right. Like, half Iceland. And he,
what if that guy's the first Icelandic?
His name is Evan Kane. He's a violinist, like a spectacular violinist. And really, to look at him, there is no other way to describe him. He's half Korean, half Icelandic. He looks like he is he lives in a temple made of crystal, right? He's like, he's beautiful. But that wouldn't have been a combination that would have been even really possible or even conceivable.
People didn't leave their villages. Like, right. The inbreeding problem was much greater back then, when your marriage pool was like four people and they'd all lived in your town for 500 years.
But there's a kind of feeling, like a hopeful feeling, that as the races intermingle, that we create a kind of a mochaccino population of the world that is
a perfect raceless race.
Well, and that also has incredible immune systems, that we get to combine all of the strengths of different worlds to make a raceless race.
You could do it. We tried to do it in our societies, but like, that was just the first step to doing it in ourselves. Right.
But I wonder if this Goldilocks effect, if it happens in sort of waves, where Your third cousin is extremely attractive to you, and then your fifth cousin really isn't. But then
it goes back.
Yeah. Then someone that's from a different, like, from a thousand miles away, suddenly is like,
it's like when Mount St. Helens erupted, and you could hear it really loudly 50 miles away, and then nothing until about 100 miles away, and then nothing until about 200 miles away, because that was the amplitude, the frequency of the sound waves.
So there's some big bass sine wave of sexual attraction that.
Nothing sexier than comparing attraction to trigonometry, for sure.
Hello.
But if that's true, you know, if these findings are true, then the incest taboo that we all feel to some degree, and except for those sickos on Pornhub, is actually been covering up all these biological benefits that we would be getting by asking our aunts and great aunts, who's single in the family.
Yeah. Have you got any, do you have any daughters that are like hot and single? Nice to meet you, by the way. I mean, the incest taboo is there because siblings and first cousins, that actually does create genetic decay over time, right?
Absolutely.
The Habsburg.
Just look at any picture of Charles II of Spain.
Right.
With his
poor fella.
With his weird jaw and his inability to think about things. I think that's the name. I think that's the name for that syndrome.
The inability to think about things.
Just the inability to think about things. So inbreeding is real. But you know, it was very common for people to marry their cousins. Einstein did. Edgar Allan Poe did. Stravinsky, H.G. Wells, Jesse James. Lots of people married their first cousins. But you know, we took it too far. Not marrying your cousin is a good thing, but...
Right, but marrying your third cousin might be a better thing. And that concludes Icelandic Incest. Entry 615.DE2722, certificate number 20625, in the omnibus. Futurelings, In the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram will probably be a great place to see if the person or other being that you are dating or mating with is related to you, which they almost certainly will be. And you can gauge the hotness of it based on some algorithm that's yet to be encoded.
The reason for the incest taboo should be that, it's just survival of the fittest. The people who didn't marry their cousins tended to have
fewer kids and lesser kids.
Well, the people who didn't marry their sisters and cousins actually did reproduce successfully, and therefore they produced offspring like them who were not into dating their sisters and cousins.
Right.
But you'd think that at some point these tertiary benefits of dating your third and fourth cousins would take effect, and we would start to see, maybe we're speaking to a future population that is descended from the third and fourth and fifth cousin daters.
We have speculated that they are descended from us, but that means...
both of us?
Well, I guess, if we're the population, but that means that Dylan, Caitlin, and Marlo have a lot of responsibility in this scenario. There have to be more people, I think.
You'd have to have more children.
Yeah, right. You and I both need to have more children.
Yeah, we don't have a Mars colony yet. I mean, it could happen at the third and fourth generation.
Right.
Marlo will have 8 kids. My kids will each have 15 kids.
Marlo, I don't think, would mind having 8 kids, but she's 8 years old right now, so she doesn't know what she wants. She thinks she wants 8 kids because she thinks it's easy to care for 8 dolls. And I'm like, it's harder to care for 8 kids than 8 dolls. And she's like, you don't know what you're talking about. You're not a mom. You can go talk to Ken at Ken Jennings on Twitter. He replies to every single tweet. If you don't like how he feels about Canadian
or
baseball
Iceland.
or Iceland, you can tweet him at Ken Jennings. I'm at John Roderick. Only tweet me praise. You can also go on my Instagram account and see if you find me attractive, if I look closely related enough to you to be hot, or distantly related enough to you to be hot on the other end of the spectrum.
If you go to see John perform live, you should make sure you have the family history app on your phone, and he will as well.
Yep, come boomp me.
You guys can boomp. Do you ever boomp your fans?
I've never. Well,
not on the stage.
Yeah,
I hope.
I mean, no, that's not how I would describe it. If I end up in that uncanny valley between being your cousin and being far enough unrelated that you don't find me attractive, don't say anything. Don't tweet about it. Just fade into the mists.
If you're in the Goldilocks zone, though, you should definitely let him know.
Yeah. Email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Please, if you are on Facebook, join the Futurelings group. Even if you're not on Facebook, the Futurelings are a fun enough organization that it's almost worth joining Facebook or reactivating your Facebook account, which you thought you had deactivated, but really is still there, lying dormant.
It's still there. I guarantee you it's still there.
You can send us mail at P.O. Box 55744 Shoreline, Washington 98155. Ken appears to be opening some mail.
I'm opening mail on mic now. What do you got? This is so exciting.
It's an envelope full of envelopes.
Here's one envelope to you that says John.
Yeah.
Here's one that says John and Ken. I guess I'm not allowed to see this.
Okay.
And then it's a poetry zine.
Oh.
Called Birds and Whistles. Two different issues of Birds and Whistles from our local College of the Arts, Cornish, one of which has a crossword on the cover, which we are both on the record enjoying. From Cornish. I'm not going to open the one to you because maybe it's a sexual advance.
Let's see. Oh, it's in an airmail envelope, which is attractive. I haven't had a letter in one of those in a long time.
And mine is not. This person left the country just to write to you.
Par avion. Oh, and it's on lavender paper. I read this privately to myself.
Is yours scented?
Let me smell. Well, it's good smelling paper.
Arno just encourages us to enjoy these poetry publications of late 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently you and Don just need to figure out how closely related you are.
Don, me and Don?
D-A-W-N, right?
Oh, well, all I have here is your devoted listener, D, and then a scribble. Is it D-A-W-N or D-O-N? Because that will change how I'm reading this letter.
It could be Doug. Would you say you date more Dons than Dougs?
Delta Dawn. I definitely have dated more Delta Dons than Dougs.
Red Dawn.
Oh, Red Dawn. She left to join the Cuban Revolution. You can go to Reddit and go to omnibus_futurelings at Reddit and fight with the other Reddits, as is the way on Reddit.
Is that what they do?
I guess.
It's like, who knows what they do? Game of Thrones.
Also, please, if you enjoy the show and you enjoy that we are independent of any large media corporation that would be handling our media buys and ad sales and admin and all the other things that our former giant media overlords handled for us, you can support the show directly at patreon.com/omnibusproject, and we are grateful.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that our genetic material may continue through time to inform yours that the catastrophe we feared never destroyed our civilization. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.